From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. It's 9:06. It is the third hour of the show. We're going to have a ton of fun. I'm Jake Skorheim, your host. Thank you guys so much. Listen, I'm going to start off with this article that I read, and I was talking about this a little bit yesterday. Like, you know, you guys know what confirmation bias is. It's like where you find things that back up things that you already believe. Now, that's not such a bad thing all the time. It'd be nice to see other things too, get other varying opinions. But in this case, I saw this story and my antenna went off because I was just thinking, my goodness, this is what I've been saying. I feel like I'm just like shouting this from the mountaintop, and this backed up so much of the things that I've been feeling. So I want to read you guys some of this. It's frightening. All right, listen to this. There's this Atlantic headline. Listen to this headline. The terrible costs of a phone-based childhood. So the Atlantic has this article by this social psychologist. He's also an author. His name is Jonathan Haidt. He's been working on this book talking about teen mental health and the impacts of cell phones on teenagers. And it's fascinating. So listen to this. This is a subheadline, I guess, of this article. For a little over a decade, we have been raising children in an environment that is hostile to human development. We need to change that now. He's basically, this author, what he's basically doing is, this psychologist, the social psychologist, he's basically done all this research where he's looked into why teenagers, specifically teenagers, but why kids of all ages are suffering from massive amounts of anxiety. And what he has come up with now, the data that he has now come up with, is undeniable. And I think as parents, we all know this. Like, I have three kids. They're 8, 6, and 4 right now. So we have been really careful about trying not to introduce, certainly not cell phones. And by any, they just do not use them. They don't get them. They don't know how to use them. I say that, but they sometimes steal my phone and take pictures of themselves doing stupid things. But we do not allow my kids to have phones. But I am shocked. I'm always shocked, actually, when I see kids, like when I'm picking my kids up from elementary school and I see kids in elementary school, I'm assuming must be older than my kids. But when I see them, they all look the same age to me. But when I see them walking around with cell phones in their pocket, the argument, of course, is that you want to be able to have access to your kids and you want to be able to get in touch with them. If there's an emergency, you want to know where they are and you want to know that they're safe. There's nothing wrong with that. But like I have said many, many times on this show, and I've gotten into arguments about it on other shows, not arguments, but heated discussions. I'm not going to give my kids cell phones until they're old enough to drive and leaving the house. And the reason that I'm not going to do that is because I do not want them to have the social media at their fingertips, which is a cancer for kids. It is like the plague. Truly, I believe that. Listen to some of these excerpts from the book. This is just fascinating. So I hope you guys are into this because I'm really fascinated by this. And I think also it's going to be one of those things that years from now, because cell phones are reasonably new. I mean, we didn't even have the iPhone until 2007. And that kind of like changed the world. They've made movies out of it, right? Talking about having a computer in your pocket. But the ramifications of having access to that information and that information following you around, and not only following you around, literally like listening in on your life and trying to figure out how to like sell you things in your own pocket, is pretty bananas when you think about it from a technological standpoint. So think about it. Here's some excerpts from the book, which I thought were really fascinating. This author, Jonathan Haidt, he writes, something went suddenly and horribly wrong for adolescents in the early 2010s. By now, you've likely seen the statistics. Rates of depression and anxiety in the United States, fairly stable in the 2000s, rose by more than 50% in many studies from 2010 to 2019. The suicide rate rose 48% for adolescents aged 10 to 19. For girls aged 10 to 14, it rose 131%. Those numbers are frightening. The problem, this article goes on to tell, was not limited to the U.S. Similar patterns emerged around the same time in Canada, the U.K., Australia, New Zealand, the Nordic countries, and beyond. By a variety of measures and in a variety of countries, the members of Generation Z, and those are people born in or after 1996, are suffering from anxiety, depression, self-harm, and related disorders at levels higher than any other generation for which we have data. It all changed in 2012. And he digs into why 2012 is a significant year. Listen to this. Those were the years when adolescents in rich countries traded in their flip phones for smartphones and moved much more of their social lives online, particularly onto social media platforms designed for virality and addiction. Once young people began carrying the entire internet in their pockets, available to them day and night, it altered their daily experiences and developmental pathways across the board. Friendship, dating, sexuality, exercise, sleep, academics, politics, family dynamics, identity, all were affected. Life changed rapidly for younger children too, as they began to get access to their parents' smartphones and later got their own iPads, laptops, and even smartphones during elementary school. Now that's what I was just talking about a second ago. You see these kids walking around in elementary school with these phones and your mind is kind of blown, because as a parent, I just think to myself, how could any parent trust their child who just doesn't know any better with all of the power that a cell phone is in their hand? And yes, I know that there's protections put on these phones and there's ways that you can kind of try to control some of these apps, but they're not completely safe by any means. This author goes on, he says, my claim is that the new phone-based childhood that took shape roughly 12 years ago is making young people sick and blocking their progress to flourishing in adulthood. We need a dramatic cultural correction, and we need it now. That 2012 thing I thought was kind of interesting. That's what he's kind of arguing. That's the year that everything turned. Have you guys ever heard of the 2012 phenomenon? I'm just putting these pieces together myself, and it sounds a little out there, but listen to this. This is kind of fascinating. And they actually made a movie out of this, I think with, what's his name? He's got a sister. He's famous. John Cusack. Thank you, Matt. All right. With John Cusack, there's this movie that came out in 2012. Actually, I think it came out in 2009. But it was called 2012. And the reason it's called 2012 is there's this phenomenon where you have all these different religions in the world. You have all these star maps, all these different things. The Mayans in their Mayan calendar. They predicted that 2012 was going to be this very, very significant year. And a lot of people thought that it was going to be a cataclysmic year. So listen to this. This is from Wikipedia. It just kind of breaks down what the 2012 phenomenon is. And I know I sound crazy right now, but it's just a weird connection. I'll get back to the cell phone thing in a second. All right, so listen to this. This is from Wikipedia. The 2012 phenomenon was a range of eschatological beliefs that a cataclysmic or transformative event would occur on or around December of 2012. This date was regarded as the end date of a 5,126-year-long cycle in the Mesoamerican long count calendar, and festivities took place to commemorate the event in the countries that were part of the Maya civilization. So basically what they're saying was, this was supposed to be, this 2012 phenomenon was believed to be, and this is what they made the movie out of, either a total end of the world event, end times, like in the Bible, or something super transformative was going to happen. Now the movie came and went, it was kind of silly movie and kind of fun, it was just like an event movie. But now we have this article talking about something kind of crazy that he credits back to 2012. So listen to this. Let's get back to the phone thing. This author, he talks about the frightening amount of time that teens are now spending on their phones. And when they're spending time on their phones, what they're not doing is what's kind of changing everything. Listen to this. Social media has gradually pushed out the in-kind person play and hangout time, which characterized earlier generations. That's what he's basically explaining here. So he says the most recent Gallup data show that American teens spend about 5 hours a day. That's insane. 5 hours just on social media platforms, which includes watching videos on TikTok and YouTube. Add in all the other phone and screen-based activities, and the number rises to somewhere between 7 and 9 hours a day on average. The numbers are even higher in single-parent and low-income families and among Black, Hispanic, and Native American families. Here's another very scary thing. A long-running survey of American teens found that from 1990 to 2010, now that would have been when I was in high school seniors became slightly less likely to agree with statements such as, quote, life often feels meaningless. So they were slightly less likely to agree with that. But as soon as they adopted a phone-based life, and many began to live in the whirlpool of social media where no stability can be found, every measure of despair has increased from 2010 to 2019 when this guy was looking at all these stats. The number of high school seniors who agreed that their life felt meaningless, think about how sad that is, that their life would feel meaningless, that number increased by 70%. 1 in 5 teenagers would say that they think that their life feels meaningless. And this is all new. This is all happening since teens adopted cell phones and social media in 2012. Another reason that they're using it so much, like addictively so, is the fear of missing out. This is a question I got. This is a conversation I got into when I did this topic on the Gee and Ursula show. One of the questions they asked me, they said, well, there's no way you're going to be able to keep cell phones from your teenagers because how are they going to have any kind of social life? How are they going to get invited to parties? Don't you want your kids to fit in? My answer to that is no, I don't. If this is what kids need to fit in, absolutely not. I don't want it. And this article definitely backs up what my wife and I feel pretty passionate about. So listen to this. In a recent study led by the University of Chicago economist Leonard Burstyn, captured the dynamics of the social media trap precisely. The researchers recruited more than 1,000 college students and asked them how much they'd need to be paid in order to deactivate their accounts on either Instagram or TikTok for just 1 month, 4 weeks. That's a standard economist question to try to compute the net value of a product to society. On average, students said that they need to be paid roughly $50 or about, they actually have these numbers broken down. It's kind of interesting. $59 for TikTok, $47 for Instagram to deactivate whichever platform that they were asked about. So a college student said, yeah, I'd shut down TikTok, but you'd have to pay me $60 a month. Then, here's the interesting part. Then the experimenters, the people investigating this, told the students that they were going to try to get most of the others in their school to deactivate that same platform, offering to pay them to do so as well, and asked, now, how much would you have to be paid to deactivate it if everybody else is having it deactivated? The answer on average was less than zero. So what you're seeing there is they're basically saying listen, I understand that this adds no inherent value to my life. In fact, it's adding a ton of stress and it's adding a lot of anxiety. The fear that I have of missing out from a situation is through the roof. And it's giving me a lot of depression. All these things are bad. But if all my classmates are using it, there's no way you're going to get this out of my hands. In the end, here's the conclusion. Haidt argues that the solution would be for parents and society to set norms such as no cell phones before age 14 and no social media before age 16, plus no phone use at school. The no phone use at school just makes total sense to me. I'm actually shocked when I see videos of schools that allow phones at breaks. I've seen schools that say you can have your phones out at lunch and you can use your phones at lunch. And so all these kids are, sitting there looking at their phones instead of doing what you and I did at lunch, which was figure out how to manage the hierarchy of life. How do you sit at the cool table if you don't feel cool? How do you not get stuck at the table with the kids who are getting bullied? How do you help the kids at the table who are bullied? How do you figure out how you might be okay with being at the table with the kids who are bullied? And realizing that those cool kids, who cares what they think? All these things you're learning at a young age, these are all things that I want my kids to learn. But if everybody else around them is just staring at their phones, that's kind of another scary thought that I'm having, literally as I'm saying it right now. Can my kids learn to have these things that I think are very valuable parts of life if all of their classmates are just staring at their phones? What a strange reality for these kids. And so it makes total sense to me why this study basically says, listen to those numbers again that we started this whole conversation with. From 2010 to 2019, you have these suicide rates rose by 48%. Rates of depression rose by 50%. Suicide rates for girls, 10 to 14, rose by 131%. Those kind of numbers, I don't think you can ignore. And it's just like, this is one of those stories. It just freaked me out and made me just want to go home and hug my kids, tell them that it's going to be okay, and try to protect them from these phones. And I get it. Like, I get how totally addictive they are. I understand that. Like, I have to make a mental decision. Like, when I get home from work at night, everybody's asleep when I get home from work at night, but like on the weekends or in the morning, if my kids are in the room, I don't pull my phone out because that's a bad habit. And I don't want to miss their life going by because I'm looking at some stupid screen. But you know that feeling where you're just like, oh, I wonder what's going on my phone. Isn't that strange that we all have that now? And I don't mean to be like up on a soapbox here. I'm not trying to like be so preachy about this. I just found this article to be fascinating. I hope you did too. And I hope let's all join together. Let's do what they suggest at the end, the conclusion at the end. We just need to set a new norm. What we say, no cell phones for kids. No social media. Social media for kids. Bad. You might agree with that. You might disagree. And that's okay. All right. We got a lot more coming up on the show. Speaking of social media, the House of Representatives today voted possibly to ban TikTok. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Are there any people out there who would say that TikTok is a necessity and that you need it? I don't know. We're going to talk to Jason Rantz about it next. Stick around for that. We got a lot more coming up here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have a very special guest with me right now, somebody I actually do videos with every single day. You guys can check those out on our Instagram pages. I think they post them on the website too. I'm not sure about that, but you can probably find them on MyNorthWest.com as well. Jason Rantz from The Jason Rantz Show on KTTH. He also has a great book out called What's Killing America. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. You always roll out the red carpet.
You know what? That's what we try to do here.
Yeah, no, like, I appreciate it.
I want to make people feel good. That's my job.
Wait, you do it for others?
No comment. All right.
Oh my God.
Have you been following all this TikTok stuff?
Yes, I have.
Are you
the
interested?
Biggest story of the day.
Are you interested in this giant story that everybody's talking about?
Have you taken a deep dive into this? It's interesting because I don't particularly like TikTok, nor do I use it for some security reasons. I have a TikTok on a burner phone, or what became one, because it's...
But you don't want it following you around and...
Yeah, I don't want it on my normal phone. Yeah. And I know the actual implications of this. So I have it on another phone that I use. It's just like an old iPhone that I don't really use outside of every once in a while. I have to go on something like that or look up something I don't want on my other phone.
Yeah.
So I just use that one.
Yeah, so it's like a built-in firewall for you, just to keep you safe. So for anybody who's unfamiliar, what's happening right now is earlier today, the House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly. This was kind of interesting, I thought, because they can't agree on anything.
Mm-hmm.
But they do kind of agree that TikTok and the government of China, the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, should not be connected in America, right?
Correct.
Which is basically what the bill is saying. They're not saying we're going to ban TikTok from use on phones. They're just saying that if the CCP does not separate itself, if they don't sell their U.S. TikTok business.
Divest.
If they don't divest.
And so you have it slightly in reverse, right? So it's ByteDance, which is the parent company.
Yes. Okay.
They have to divest. And the reason why that matters is because they're claiming that they're not sharing any data with the CCP, which is total nonsense because every business that comes out of China is directly connected and has to turn over all of that kind of documents.
Really?
Yeah.
So what's interesting is also, and would add strength to what you just said, is the CCP gave a statement ahead of this vote in the House of Representatives. And if they didn't have any interest in this, it's interesting that they feel so strongly about it. They said, although the United States has never found evidence that TikTok threatens U.S. national security, it has not stopped suppressing TikTok. In the end, this will inevitably come back to bite the United States itself. This kind of bullying.
They spell it B-Y-T-E.
No.
That would have been great.
They should have. This kind of bullying behavior that cannot win in fair competition disrupts companies, normal business activity, damages the confidence of international investors in the investment environment, and damages the normal international economic and trade order. That is from a spokesperson for the CCP.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, though, that warning did not work because the House of Representatives passed this.
Yeah, they don't care.
They don't care. What I thought was interesting is Nancy Pelosi actually did a pretty good job of breaking down why she thinks that TikTok needs to divest. Did you hear this clip earlier today?
I love that grandma who has never used something other than a flip phone
is
going to school us on
this. She started with that. She goes, I'm a grandma, so I get it.
First of all, this is not a ban on TikTok. I'm a grandmother of teenagers. I understand the entertainment value, the educational value, the communication value, the business value for some business on this. This is not an attempt to ban TikTok. It's an attempt to make TikTok better. Tic-tac-toe. A winner. A winner.
A winner. A winner. I love it. I actually think that's a great drop.
Tic-tac-toe.
A winner. A winner.
But then she did go on to explain why she thinks it needs to divest.
The Tibetans have come forth and said on TikTok in China, they are suppressed. They cannot put their message out. Not only that, the Chinese government misrepresents the situation in Tibet. In Hong Kong, well, let me just tell you about Hong Kong. During the Taiwan election, TikTok TikToked into Taiwan that the Uyghurs, on whom there is a genocide exercised by the Chinese government, they have told the people in Taiwan that the Uyghurs like that genocide. And they told them that the people of Hong Kong like the destruction of their democracy. They don't frame it that way, but that's their message. And again, suppressing the communication from Tibet. And then just people yesterday on the steps, we heard from the Taiwan people. We heard from the Tibetans. We heard from them.
You're running out of time.
And we heard from a woman whose husband was arrested because of his communication with somebody with a shared view. So this is controlled by the Chinese Communist government. But forgetting that, if you can, I can't. Think of this.
Ladies, time has expired.
This gets to her point.
Control the algorithm. They can change it any time.
Does the gentleman from New Jersey wish to allocate more time?
I urge a yes vote.
You have a lot of people in support of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in support of this. There's also a lot of people who are against it, and that's the biggest problem here. The biggest issue with this bill, because it is being perceived as just banning TikTok, and in fairness, it could ban TikTok 6 months after it passes if they don't divest.
Yeah.
The people who use this the most and are the most passionate and the most addicted are younger. You are going into an election and you're going to say, I'm the person who is going to ban that tool, that app that you absolutely love and are addicted to.
That is
not smart.
It's funny you mentioned that because Representative Maxwell Frost, Democrat, Florida, he is a Gen Z congressman.
Socialist.
27 years old. He had this to say about it.
I don't think it'll be helpful with young voters, but... You know, my argument here, yes, it has to do with young people, but taking a step back, I just think it's bad policy.
He's also a big TikToker. He's on TikTok a lot. That's part of his campaign. He says, we're talking about a platform that allows people to put out information, news, whatever they want to put out, he said. It is unreasonable to believe that in 180 days that a buyer would be found and that the deal can move forward, which would result in TikTok being banned, whether it's banned for a year or 2 years or 6 months. A ban is a ban, he says.
He's wrong. It's not going to be that difficult to find a buyer. It really isn't.
You mean to the phenomenally popular piece of social media that everybody can't stop from using?
Yeah, I think precisely. They're going to find a buyer. They will easily find someone. That's separate from whether or not you think it's a good policy. But I mean, this idea that, you're not going to be able to find someone and there's no guarantee that it'll be able to continue after 6 months.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. How quickly, generally speaking, did Elon Musk acquire Twitter? I mean, you can, in that case,
very quickly,
he had to raise money, yeah. I guess. But you know, you have lots of folks who will step forward and take ownership of this thing. It won't be any of the current tech companies that have Meta and Google. Like, they're not going to get involved here because it would be an antitrust nightmare. But you'll be able to find a buyer. At the end of the day, we know, as a matter of fact, that this information, all the information, is going directly to the CCP. We do understand how they have manipulations around algorithms, which is how they make sure we see certain things that we might not benefit from headed into an election. So this is very clearly a national security issue, and parents should not want this in front of their kids as well.
Absolutely.
Let's also be clear. You've got Joe Biden who says, I'm going to sign this, but his campaign is on TikTok. So
yeah.
There's
and
a
you
lot
have, you have
of
young
weirdness.
Congress people. You have people who use this who are saying, like, listen, if you want voters, if you want this massive bloated potential voting block, they don't vote. But if they did vote.
Well, 18-year-olds, 17 to 25-year-olds use TikTok.
No, I know, but they tend not to vote in huge numbers.
Sometimes. Usually. But when they do vote in large numbers.
Here's the question, though. Are young voters going to be super, super excited to get out and vote for Joe Biden?
They're already not excited, and this makes them less excited. Yeah. And that's his issue, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if, quote unquote, lots of younger voters vote this time around. They did the last time. They did under Barack Obama in large numbers. And that actually makes a difference for Democrats because that's generally who they vote for. So when you're talking about an election in which we expect to be very, very close, that could be decided between like 20,000 votes in Michigan and 45,000 in Wisconsin— you can't really afford, if you're Biden, to lose any younger voter. That's pretty much a guaranteed vote for you. So this is a little tricky.
It is tricky.
It's really tricky for him politically. And Donald Trump has even come out and kind of said, we shouldn't do this. I don't think his reason's very good.
Well, he tried to do this, though. When he was originally in the White House, he was the one who originally started this whole thing.
Separate issue in the sense that I don't think, and Joe Biden's on the same page as this as well. If you're a federal employee, you're not using your work phone.
Yes.
With TikTok. And that makes total sense. That's not controversial at all, unless you're misusing your work phone, well, I
like
guess.
Like a lot of normal companies who aren't even government, yeah, like agencies.
That is totally
don't
normal.
Allow you to use a lot of social, yeah, media sites.
100%. So they're on the same page there. But Donald Trump is out kind of walking that position back of a general ban, I think for the same reason of it just seems politically like a nightmare. He's saying it actually helps Meta, which I don't think it does unless Meta starts to change.
Yeah, I disagree with him there.
Dramatically.
I don't think it does. Yeah.
And I suppose it's possible. I mean, Instagram is basically, which is owned by Meta, is like TikTok, but I don't think Facebook is. So I don't see the same level of threat because when you're talking about TikTok versus Instagram, they are clearly different as far as the kind of content,
sure,
that you're worried about, that he's worried about, like the propaganda stuff. You're not really getting that on Instagram, but you do get that on TikTok.
Well, and also what the big issue is, Meta is not owned or not, there's no huge investment or it's not being governed by,
yep,
the CCP, which is what this is all about.
Yeah. And I actually do believe that that's what this is about.
Yeah, I do
this
too.
Is truly about the CCP, and that's why you're, for the most part, getting such bipartisan support. I think there were like 62, 63 members of Congress who didn't vote in favor of this, including two who directly get money from the TikTok lobbyists.
Yeah, it was 352 to 65.
65. There, yeah, you go. So, yeah. I mean, that is a pretty significant
and one,
bipartisan
one,
effort.
One congresswoman voted present.
Yeah.
It looks like one voted present. But everybody else seems like they're all on the same page. And it's just nice. It's just nice that everybody's kind of on the same page.
Yeah. Although we don't know what's going to happen in the Senate because,
yeah,
two things can happen. Number one, the bill that we currently know could be rewritten, right? It could go from 6 months to a year to find someone. It could, I don't know, walk back some of what they're looking for.
Might conveniently take until after the election and before they do,
yeah,
something about it.
Yeah, and on top of that, I don't know if it has as much support in the Senate as it did in the House, and obviously you can only afford,
well,
to
John
lose
Fetterman,
so many.
John Fetterman, Democrat, he said this thing needs to pass. He'd vote for it.
Yeah, he got Rand Paul, on the other hand, saying no, 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 no. I think Republicans are more on board than Democrats in the Senate on this.
Sure.
With the exception of Rand Paul, who's more a libertarian. And I understand the free speech argument. I've covered this topic on Fox a few times, and they're just like really want you to know what they want you to tell them what your position is. Like, I don't really know. Like, I lean towards the ban, this legislation, for the reasons we discussed, but I'm not going to pretend that I'm not concerned about the First Amendment implications.
Yeah.
And if this was Meta or Google, I would be completely against it just on the First Amendment grounds. And, yep, so the only thing that is leading me to support it is the CCP connection, because, yeah, I do view this more as a national security issue than I do a free speech issue.
Very interesting. Well, we'll see what happens in the Senate. Jason Rantz, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jason Rantz from The Jason Rantz Show. Check out his show and his book, What's Killing America. All right, we're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It is the final segment of the night. And guys, I have really pulled a rabbit out of my hat on this one. You're going to get that joke here in just a minute. This is a really good story. I've saved it for the best. I've saved the best for last, as I always do. Do me a favor, though. Before I tell you the story, download the podcast. After the show tonight, when you're done listening to the show and you feel fully satisfied with what we've given you for 3 hours, and I hope you're listening for 3 straight hours. That's my dream. Deb the Podcast, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. We post a bunch of great stuff there, so check it out. All right, listen to this. PETA has asked the White House to get rid of Easter eggs at the annual Easter egg roll. They have an odd suggestion for a replacement, but they do have a suggestion. So I'm going to read this letter that PETA sent to Jill Biden, who kind of runs the president's wife, always runs the Easter egg hunt. So Jill Biden is running it, and PETA sent her a letter. Here's what the letter says. I'm writing on behalf of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, the world's largest animal rights organization with more than 5 million members and supporters in the U.S., to respectfully suggest an appealing, that's a word they throw in there, way to modernize the White House Easter egg roll. One that would be truly inclusive and welcomed by every tot, that's another joke, you'll get it in a minute, who doesn't eat eggs for religious, cultural, or environmental reasons, or because they object to the way that animals, including hens, whose reproductive systems are exploited for eggs, are raised and killed these days. Anyway, she goes on to basically say, can you replace Easter eggs with potatoes? Easter is not a time of renewal or joy for chickens, the letter says, or on egg factory farms. It can take up to 36 hours in typically hellish conditions for a hen who spends her entire life in a cage smaller than the letter-sized sheet of a paper to produce just one of the thousands of eggs slated to be used at the White House Easter egg roll. In starch contrast, that's another potato pun there, I guess, a potato roll wouldn't exploit any sentient beings and would encourage empathy and kindness to animals while supporting potato farmers in the U.S. By the way, I think Washington State would benefit from this because I think we grow more potatoes here than anywhere else. Idaho, they claim that, but I think it's actually Washington. All right, so you might be asking yourself, is this a good idea? Should they do this? I mean, my personal opinion is no, they should still do the eggs. I didn't realize, though, that eggs had such a history with Easter. I mean, I know that I understand that they're synonymous, but I didn't realize such a long history with Easter. Look at this. I looked this up for you guys. I do research for the show. You may not believe it, but I do. So listen to this. This is from EnglishHeritage.org. The custom of the Easter egg hunt comes from Germany. Some suggest that its origins date all the way back to the late 16th century when the Protestant reformer Martin Luther organized egg hunts for his congregation. The men would hide the eggs for the women and the children to find. This was a nod to the story of the resurrection in which the empty tomb was discovered by women. In the German Lutheran tradition, the Easter egg hunt is linked to the Easter bunny, or the Easter hare, as he was originally known. The first written reference to the Easter hare was in 1682. Can you guys believe that? How crazy. I didn't know that history was there, because I've always kind of wondered myself, yeah, I get Easter, I understand the resurrection, I get all of the biblical stuff, but Easter eggs and bunnies, it just doesn't quite make sense to me. But now there's a history to it. So I hope you learned something. I certainly learned something today. All right, this has been a great show, I think. I hope you guys enjoyed it, and I hope that you plan on coming back tomorrow. We got a great show we're working on for you, but for tonight, we gotta go. Night-night.